Hey guys, welcome to the Crit Crew. We don't have an intro, so we're doing
it. Oh, what a That's
the greatest shit in the world.
You have no power over me.
I was literally about to paint that scene from Jurassic Park where they just roll up on top of the mountains. I see a couple of the long-nosed fuckers strolling along.
Do it.
We're kicking things, coward. We're kicking it off with our first non-intro episode.
No, I'm going to do it, Caleb.
No, I'm done.
Fine. Okay, welcome again to the Crit Crew. We are talking about Horizon Zero Dawn. Ba-ba-bum. And apparently a not good enough intro. I figured saying welcome to the Crit Crew would be intro enough, but...
Aloy would be so disappointed in you.
That's the best. That's the heat you're bringing. All right, so we're talking about Horizon Zero Dawn, which came out in... Max actually didn't do the usual amount of legwork that he typically does.
2017, 2018?
I think, yeah, I want to say 2016.
I'm just trying to make y'all appreciate
it. Not 2017. I do appreciate it. But it was developed, 2017, Guerrilla Games.
They make Killzone.
A lot of Killzones.
Do you guys want to talk about Killzone?
No.
I do. I have a little bit of interesting development history with this game that I want to bring up, but I don't know when the right time is.
Go ahead and do that before I do the very long story breakdown.
Well, so as per our Outer Wilds episode, I watched part of the No Clip documentary on the making of Horizon Zero Dawn.
Podcast is this cross promotion for No
Clip. I think it's a lovely documentary series that gets into game development in a way where it isn't available elsewhere. And I was looking at sort of Guerrilla's history with the Killzone franchise, and they were just starting to get pretty fatigued. And it seemed as if they needed a bit of a break. So they had all of their developers pitch upwards of 40 project ideas.
Yeah.
And this was, one of the leading examples, sort of a post-apocalypse where you have a female protagonist who is reminiscing on past history, whether it's, buildings, artifacts, that sort of stuff. And while this was being tossed around, a little game called Enslaved, Odyssey to the West, came out and was kind of under similar tracking. So they decided to shelve it until they were able to, get more familiarized with the PlayStation 4 hardware. They released Killzone Shadowfall, I think 2014 was when that came out, but that sort of gave them enough space between Enslaved and Horizon Zero Dawn. There's some similarities, but it's not quite the overlap.
I also had seen, didn't they arrive at the idea, the idea of, Aloy and the female protagonist, didn't they arrive at that pretty early in?
They had concept art nailed down
for
that. Yeah,
that would make sense.
They were definitely on that.
Very distinct character design too.
And also I think it is this, as usual we're talking about a game years after it came out, but
classic.
It is worth noting that this is about to come to PC.
Interesting.
We're not exact, because this game is very, very, very well regarded. So it is getting a PC release, I think, an undetermined quarter in 2020, so I don't actually know exactly.
Well, who knows when anything is going to be releasing now.
Yep. Everything has a big old TBD.
Yes. All right, so do you want me to go into a brief summary of this game?
Dinosaurs. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I'm good, I know that some listeners, Brian, don't like it when we do story breakdowns, but this is a very
Brian
dense
game. Brian doesn't a lot, apparently.
Well, yeah, but this is a very dense game, so I think I will at least try to go through what is necessary to sort of listen to this episode without any understanding of the game. So I'm going to gloss over a lot. This is bad. I went for a run before we recorded, and I think that was a mistake.
Yeah, that's definitely a mistake.
I left all my juice out on the field.
He's got rubber tongue.
Anything longer than a mile, you're going to get that rubber tongue.
Yeah, that happens. Anyway, so like Caleb said, this game takes place in a post-apocalyptic world, I think based in Colorado primarily. Not that anyone like really knows that, because again, this is so far removed from the civilization we are currently in that they don't even, it's not like they're trying to return to the way things were. It's just the way things are, which is more of like a tribal hunter-gatherer type civilization, which the dominant, or the world is just covered in basically robotic dinosaurs. They are roaming the lands. There's still regular fauna, but robot dinosaurs. That is a really big selling point of this game.
And isn't it also, isn't like the civilization that went, that got Apocalypse on, weren't they like even more advanced than we are now, so it's like twice removed?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the specific year this game allegedly takes place in, but like they have giant robots and holograms.
There's like a 900 year gap between.
I believe it's the year 3100.
Okay.
So you did take notes.
No, I don't know. I just remembered that.
Okay. Moving on. You play as Aloy, who is a outcast of the Nora tribe, who at a young age falls into old ruins and comes across a Focus, which is this device that lets her interact with the old world.
It looks like a guitar pick.
It looks like a guitar pick that you put in your ear. But you can like see holograms and interact with technology and stuff. In an effort to no longer be an outcast, which we'll come back to this, she is an outcast because she doesn't have a mother, more or less. Again, we're glossing over a lot of stuff.
Dang old orphans.
But she wants to, there is a proving, which is a sort of coming of age trial that everyone in the tribe does, and she's going to compete in it, hopefully to not be an outcast anymore. It is attacked by a cult called the Eclipse, led by a man named Helios. And from here, the story kind of branches into two different paths that interweave at varying degrees. The first is trying to figure out what is up with this cult, the Eclipse. Figuring out what Helios wants, Aloy learns that they're sort of worshiping this AI named Hades. She finds this mysterious person named Silence, who knows a lot more about the civilization than she does, because he was a former Eclipse member. So that is plot A, trying to figure out what Eclipse is all about. Plot B, the interesting one, is figuring out what happened to our civilization. And this is where I'm really compressing a lot. What happened was, in the year 3000 whatever, like, we had developed robots, and there was like, it was kind of like a corporate dystopia, where like corporations could hire robots, there were corporate wars, you could like buy these robots to fight wars for you. And the leading manufacturer of these robots was Faro Automated Systems by Ted Faro, who was the CEO.
It was Amazon by...
Jeff Bezos. they created a robot that was essentially unhackable, and also as a failsafe could use biomass, like organic life, as fuel and could replicate. There was a glitch with these robots, and they began to just like consume all life, all organic matter, all humans, and replicate at a rate that humanity could not overcome. There's a scientist hired by Pharaoh named Elizabeth Sobeck, who was hired to sort of find a way out of this. And what she determined is humanity is going to die, full stop, cannot be avoided. She is going to take the brightest minds and develop this Zero Dawn protocol to do a bunch of sci-fi bullshit to basically like allow humanity to come back in the future, which has a bunch of different sort of subsystems to that. They are like, they are going to invent robots that can terraform the Earth and create life again after all these robots wipe through and kill everything. They're going to take like embryos and clone humans and try to re-educate them. And when life is stable outside and the robots have died off, or malfunction, whatever, humans can come back, and they're going to educate the humans about our civilization so that they can come back with all the knowledge we've acquired.
And then Aloy is basically revealed to be a clone.
Yeah, she's a clone of Elizabeth Sobeck, which is why she has all this access that other people can't seem to get. Yeah. The problem where things all went wrong is that Pharaoh realized, I am the bad guy in this story. Like, this is all my fault. So he sabotaged the program that like would re-educate people so that no one could ever learn about our civilization and realize how much he fucked up. One of the realizations that Aloy has is that Hades, the program that Eclipse is worshiping, or like being manipulated by, more or less, was meant to, like, if it ever seemed like what the Zero Dawn protocol was creating wouldn't create a helpful environment for humanity, Hades would like reactivate all the robots and wipe everything out again. Until that humanity had like a good footing to actually grow. The game ends, you destroy, like, Eclipse was gonna destroy the whole world through some more sci-fi bullshit, but Aloy stopped it. She killed Helios. Silence gets away, setting up some stuff for a sequel if they want to do that. But that's the bare minimum of what you need to know for to know this game. We are now over 10 minutes in. Someone else talk, please.
So I guess like a good place to start on the praise front is the world building of a new IP. I mean, this is a very, very fleshed out, very realized, very like they have thought. Now, in your description, how many times did you say yada yada sci-fi bullshit? Because that also does start to kind of broach on some of the things that I think are maybe problems with the game.
That is fair. Part of the reason I said that is so that the story summary part doesn't last 20 minutes.
No, but... I know. But, like, I'm all for very abstract ideas that require thinking. But I'm not always for very, very lengthy ideas that require considerable exposition and explanation.
What did you disagree with specifically? Was there anything?
No, I thought your summarization was good.
No, I'm like with the game. Like, were there any like plot points that like rubbed you the wrong way? Is what it sounds like.
Oh, I mean, not necessarily rubbed me the wrong way. It's just that there were a lot of points through it where I just kind of felt myself going, okay.
And I think this is sort of a larger problem when you're talking about sort of a story that spans multiple millennia. Mm-hmm. When you think about like a lost civilization that inherently has its own intrigue, and as a player, you are simultaneously trying to enjoy and appreciate sort of the really new stuff around you, but then also dig deeper and understand like the larger mythos of what created it. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of Prometheus story is always going to be interjected with things that seem a little convoluted and, you know, not satisfactory. Mm-hmm. When I, full context, I played maybe about 15 hours of this game, and I fell off real hard, but it was starting to get into the narrative of, okay, what happened before this? How were these machines created? What role does Aloy play in all of this? To get sort of the seeds planted and to kind of just fall off of that. Like, it didn't really sink its hooks into me too much.
Breaks my dang heart.
And then sort of getting the big summary of what happens, I, you know, my eyes glazed over. I'll be completely honest. It didn't really do much to excite me, because I think I've seen this sort of narrative a lot. Whether it's in sci-fi or fantasy, sort of that, like, this abstract creator that you don't quite understand, by the end of it, knowing the ins and outs is never as fascinating of the initial buildup and in the lead mm-hmm. entry. So
I do like the component that a lot of times games like this, when they broach the abstract creator concept, they go literally abstract. They go literally the direction of the player is not able to fully understand it because the space, the sci-fi. But I do appreciate that the creator narrative here are super fallible people that are closer in that the creator mythos in this has more from a reality perspective in common with us, the player, than we have in common with the character we are playing, Aloy, who has grown up in this primitive future tech land.
Yeah.
My issue stems from those scenes that are very cliche and have been done before, where, you know, protagonist is confronted with one aspect of the creator mythos and is given sort of the huge expository dump. And when I was watching that story recap, that seemed to be quite a few moments of Gaia. I think Gaia is their name.
Gaia is sort of like an overseer program. Yeah.
Sort of getting like a full, you know, 5 minutes of exposition. And for me, it's just, you know, I'd rather get that stuff more organically. And I know it's, I look at their track history, and one of their big development hurdles was fleshing out a story with a fully realized world from the ground up. And, you know, how do you create this within the context of an open world? They had to hire, you know, additional staff member who specialized in just narrative building and story leads. And they really at least took the time to, you know, get the right talent in order to make this, you know, fleshed out.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm the one that brought this episode to, in front of y'all for this podcast. And compared to other games that I've talked about, this one isn't so much that I think like Horizon Zero Dawn is like the pinnacle of art in games. Like, I enjoy the story. Quick side note, like, this was one of the only games like I've more or less played with Annie. Mm-hmm. Because like I got it like around Christmas time, and I got to the scene with the proving where like Aloy comes under attack and like things really pop off, and Annie's like, "You can't go to bed. I need to know what happens. What next? Like what happens next?" I couldn't, like, we had the arrangement that I couldn't do any story missions without her, which, I mean, you're right. They are huge exposition dumps. But to go back to my original point, the reason I'm bringing this game, I do think it's a great story. But by no means told in the most artful way. But there are a lot of other little things that I think it does well that move the needle forward a little bit on open world games.
Oh yeah, and I think that the factoring in the detail that this game is from the ground up new ideas is enormous. I mean, there are definitely components that I would praise more so than an open world game like Red Dead Redemption, whereas Red Dead Redemption has another game and literal American history as its source material that, like, they managed to still make something that has chunks that are just super dull, whereas this game is, again, literally idea one of 50 that they managed to make a full game into. Like, I gotta give a lot of props on that, because in a world of sequel, threequel, how many games can we make out of this franchise? It's lovely to see new ideas. I love seeing in the game world is colorful and interesting, and there's a lot of like unique visuals, unique feels to it. Sometimes it feels not really. I was gonna say, like, the only game that I've played that has some things that at times feel kind of similar is like Nier Automata. Or Automata, but I mean, still, like, it's very original. Which,
well, I think there's a level of lived in quality to Horizon Zero Dawn that you don't get from something like Red Dead, and it really just comes down to the encounters you have with these dinosaur robots. I mean, they behave in a herd like mentality. You can really, just based off of the designs alone and their animation, you can tell what you're going to be up against. I will never forget the first time that I saw one of those towering... David, you probably know the name of it.
That's a broadneck.
A broadneck, okay.
I'm going to actually Google that. I was way too confident.
That's a real David personality trait.
That's fantastic.
Feels confident, instantly undermines it.
So it's one of those things where you see it in the wild and you are immediately in awe of what's in front of you, and to understand that you can also, that's the way that the game introduces its Far Cry, you know, waypoint mechanic, which is in every open world game, essentially, where you climb to the top, click your sync button, and then you get to see more of the map. It's a very gamified open world trope, but to put it onto a living, breathing spectacle like that, where you have to actively, you know, chase it down and kind of climb up it in order to get to your overview, I think is a really smart choice. And I think it works really well for what they're trying to do.
And
yeah. Guys, it's what? Called a tall neck.
Oh!
Get wrecked, bro!
But also, like... since the crux of the game has to do with this sort of narrative tension between machine and man, I appreciate like how central to even gameplay mechanic the machines are. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're like it's like there's somebody who's like, you want to make some like real dope robot dinosaurs, like the dope. Can you guys think of a cooler robot dinosaur like group in a media? Because I'm hard pressed. If you're listening to this and your jam is robot dinosaurs, then oh man, is this the game for you?
That's, I mean, I do appreciate that part of the hook of this game is kind of the same thing as like Doom. Where Doom, it's like, hey, do you want to fight monsters in hell and listen to metal? It's like, fuck yeah. And this one's like, hey, do you want to fight robot dinosaurs with a bow? It's like, hell yes, I do.
Yes. It almost like, I mean, again, just like taking the dinosaurs and making the way that you interact with them tied to their visual characteristics. Mm-hmm. That to me harkens in a way to Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah,
like I felt like they definitely like took some inspiration from the way that Shadow of the Colossus lets you look at something and then instantly in your head just start coming up with ways to interact with it.
David.
I'm not. Don't get. Hmm. We can't.
There must be something you would like about that.
This isn't David recommend games time. This is crit time.
Which on the conversation of like you know, just from a not needing to tell people how to interact with something and letting people just see something and then figure out how to interact with it. It kind of like almost goes against how much exposition is in the game at times.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's that ultimate, like, you know, the show don't tell component can be applied to gameplay. Sometimes when you look at something, you just have a feeling how you should interact with it, and it feels good when you don't have to be told how to interact with it. And this game does that at times, and I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the combat is very satisfying to me, just because like it's not just, you know, fight the things, it's cool. But there are also different, like, some of the things that you learn that Max is talking about is these different robots have, like, hard points on them that can mm-hmm. do different things. Like, there's one, like, the robot buffalo has, like, this little, like, electric charge on the top, and if you hit it with an electric arrow, it'll, like, explode and stun all the robots around it.
Shadow of the Colossus!
Oh my god. So, like...
Oh god, Max, I've got that, too. Something's going around.
I know, it's Colossus 19.
And in like some cases when you're just fighting a couple robots, it's not necessary to get into that thinking, but like there are so many times when you're like, okay, I am just up on a group of Striders and I'm gonna fight them, and then like the crab robots come in, and then in the middle of that these other robot, like you're just suddenly swarmed, so you're suddenly doing thinking like, okay, I need to stun this one, and then I'll take the gun from this, like I'll shoot off the gun from the Ravager, and then I'll pick that up and I'll use that to destroy, where it almost becomes like a little bit of a combat puzzle of like trying to figure out what is the biggest threat, what tool do you need to take them down quickly, where do you need to hit it to make that happen.
And if you take something down, what do you get for taking it down, and how can taking one thing down apply to how you interact with the next thing?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone that I've talked to about this, the gameplay is where you get a lot of praise. I mean, like, people are like, this game feels good to play. And from when I've played it, like, it's there is like a level of like instant intuition where it's just like, oh, that feels good. Oh, this is cool.
And they're, again, like, this is their first third person game ever that they've made.
Yeah.
So to know that they were able to nail it so definitively the first time, mm-hmm. I mean, that's impressive.
And something else, that, speaking to what Max said, something that I appreciate about this game is that you definitely have a problem in a lot of sort of open world RPGs like this, where like there's a power creep that at a certain point you are indestructible. Mm-hmm. Or like in Skyrim, where you're just casually walking around with a million gold and like the best weapons possible. I think with this, you are like, normally you can buy things, but you're typically crafting your own ammunition with different parts you've scavenged. And I think it is very smart that the main currency you use to buy things from different traders is also the main thing that you need to actually craft weapons. So, like, the stronger you get, the more resources you are using to take down an enemy. Mm-hmm. And then that requires more pieces to resupply after a certain fight. So at least in that regard, it sort of keeps you in check and also sort of feeds into this sort of, like, hunter-gatherer sort of, like, in crafting a, reliant in a, theme in that
a,
it wants.
In a post-Minecraft world where all of a sudden everybody is putting crafting into their games, because it's true, like, crafting as a mechanic has become so big lately, it's nice to see games that, like, put crafting in that make narrative mechanical sense.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest, crafting in this makes more sense than crafting does in something like Red Dead. Just kind of, it just kind of does. It just kind of does.
Right. Awooga, we got a hot take coming in. Awooga.
And this is actually part of the reason why I was also excited about talking about this game immediately after Red Dead is I think that there are really some points of comparison there. From like a, not obviously not from a narrative like point, because we're very different subject matter, but definitely from a, how do you tell a single character focused story in a large open world setting? Which more and more I'm feeling like maybe those ideas just don't line up well. Like maybe open world just from a gameplay standpoint always works better as an RPG where you're making your own character.
Because
you're kind of dealing with a open world closed narrative versus an open world open narrative.
I mean, the problem that you always run into games like this is where it's like, ah, you have just been opened up to the world. You should go do this. And you're like, I'm going to go screw around for 10 hours on the opposite side of the map collecting flowers.
Yes.
And like, that doesn't line up with you trying to find like your own person and like establish who you are.
And it definitely doesn't line up with the character that you've been introduced to in the way that they would probably believably behave.
Yeah. I feel like you guys are hazing me in a way right now, because while we were texting before this episode, y'all were coming down pretty hard on this game, and suddenly it's all positives, and I feel like you're just waiting to like pull the rug out from under me.
No, I
where's
mean,
the heat?
No, I mean the thing is, like, as much as there are things that I could be more critical on, I want to just give extra praise on the fact that this is so original an idea. I think a lot of my criticism just comes down to like I guess it kind of just comes down to the fact that I guess I don't want to be exposited to anymore. At all. Just, I'm done with exposition. And I get I kind of get like this world has so much information that they want to tell you, but like show don't tell. Sometimes you don't actually have to be told things. Sometimes it's fine.
It ends up turning into so many narratives when at its core, it was basically just a story about a girl trying to find her place in her tribe, you know?
And Alloy is great. The voice actress does a phenomenal job. I don't remember her name. Like
Ashley Birch.
I totally would just like, yeah, I would take more character over more exposition in almost every situation.
I do like her, but I feel like she in some ways wasn't the most compelling character in that story. Like, she is an outcast, and she is voiced, like, very kind of, like, distant. But she's also, like, surrounded by these huge outsized personalities, which sometimes, like, kind of swallow her up in a way. Which, that does, I mean, I don't want to take too much credit away, because she did really nail it. And Aloy is a very interesting character, but sometimes, like, the other characters kind of become more interesting than her.
If you can have a very larger-than-life personality, though, with you can kind of, like, there's a component to which, like, a video game character can lose some dynamic qualities because they're too much more larger-than-life, and they're fun as a side character, but you'd never want to play that character as your main character. It would just be like, okay, I'm done. Okay, I'm done with this guy.
I mean, yeah, it is such a hard line to toe between, you know, a complete Gordon Freeman and, you know, a Nico Bellic in Grand Theft Auto 5. Like, there's like there's a very fine line between that. So you have Aloy. Her main thrust is sort of the intrigue of where does she fit in all of this? Not just her tribe. It becomes much more in the context of the current state of the world. That's the main thrust, that fish out of water story.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't really interject too much more vibrancy than that. I think that's even evident in some of the side quest missions where, you know, you expect... David, you might have more... insight on the side quests. I only completed a couple, but in terms of a gratifying payoff, I felt like I wasn't really rewarded with much of anything.
There are two things going there. One, overall, I think side quests is actually something that I wanted to praise, and I have a specific note on.
Okay.
That you are right. Like, the rewards in this game never totally match up, because a lot of the stuff isn't necessary. Like, you have different outfits, but there are only a handful that are actually viable. You're normally like so loaded with other, like the rewards that you get, that like the payoff isn't necessarily there. The things that I do like is that when you look at side quests in other games, I think there's a lot of diversity in these and have a lot of characters that I actually still remember and could name right now for you.
Mm-hmm.
In other games, like the stereotype is like, I will give you this item, please take it here. Or right. Please kill like right. 5 boars and bring them back to me. With this, like, I did not do any research into the different side quests. These are just the ones that I remember. Like, there's one where you come across 2 traders, and one's like, I need you to bring me this part. And the one next to him is like, screw this guy, I need this part. Mm-hmm. So, like, you have that one. There's one where you're, like, trying to find, like, it's this long story about trying to find what happened to this dude's sister. There's, like, a Romeo and Juliet sort of side quest.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, like, you can come across bandit camps that need to be cleared out, and the dude that'll help you is this total, well, nihilist, and his name is Nil, and he's just like, I'm just happy to kill. Like, that's really, like, if you want to help me kill, like, that's all I really live for.
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, so, like, they're very well voice acted and realized. You guys want to make fun of me. Do you want me to tell you about the one side quest that almost made me cry?
Yes.
I know, go for
always.
It.
Always.
There is one in the DLC, which I bought, where you fight, like, you come across this dam that's defunct, obviously, because it's years out, everything is broken down. And there's this, like, scavenger there that's like, I really need to figure out, like, what this is all about. Like, I swear to God, I saw... Like, he's super pumped because he thought he saw a mirror in the control room, which is obviously something that would be hard to come across. And he just, like, wants to find a mirror so bad. You go through this whole quest and, like, there's no mirror. It was a trick of a light, and he's kind of bummed. And then at the end of it, you turn the dam back on, and, like, he presses the button, and, like, the screens light up. He's like, ah, what does it do? He's just, like, super pumped that all this stuff is happening. But, like, I got a little teary, like, because this dude was so stoked over a dam control interface. Like, these people, like, have a lot of value ascribed to, like, the artifacts that we have left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them have immense value, even though to us they're worthless.
Yeah.
Where, like, you can collect coffee mugs and they're, like, treasured items. And, like, in this side quest, it's like, there's just something kind of melancholy about this dude who is so pumped about what to us is really, like, there's not a lot of mystery to it.
Yeah.
And I got a little weepy over that.
That's super neat. And actually just this, like, the topic of, you know, compelling side quests kind of instantly made me think of a game which we might talk about, which is things like the Borderlands franchise, which talk about non-compelling side quests.
Yeah.
There's just... Like, it is admittedly rare to see games that really spend the time on their side quest characters. A lot of times a side quest character is, like, somebody who you met in the main story for 3 minutes, and but wait, this guy has a thing for you that he can have you do. Or it's just a reused, like, looping character asset that they're like, ah, yes, this is the side quest man.
Yeah.
Right. And this is Mr. Needs Pelts.
Mr. Needs Pelts. And it is.
First of his name.
First of his, hey, can you help me? but, like, it's true. It's super rare to really see people putting thought into, you know, the nobody characters effectively.
Like, I just, if you go, if you're gonna look up anything, just like YouTube, like Horizon Zero Dawn, like Waterlogged is a side quest. His name is like Gildun, G-I-L-D-U-N, and just like the energy that this dude brings and the way he's voice acted, like I end this quest, I'm like, shit, I want to spend more time with this dude.
I want to spend more time with Gildun.
Yeah. And there are a lot of characters like that in this game that like you sort of come attached to and you want to hear more about.
And like with the amount of voice talent out there right now, there's really no reason why you can't make good characters across the board. Like there just isn't. Yeah, no, it's true.
I mean, the only other note I have here of things I specifically want to call out and praise is we've talked about like the female protagonist, but there's a fair amount of good representation in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is worth noting that there was some criticism from native tribes about appropriation.
I wanted to dive into that a little bit.
The slightly rose-tinted glass way they're viewing primitivism. Yeah, little bit of a... Yeah.
I don't necessarily have a lot to say to that because not being someone of that background, I don't think I have much standing to like defend or argue with it. I mean, the only thing I will say is that once I was aware of that criticism, I was sort of looking for problematic moments in this game and they didn't necessarily jump out at me. But again, I'm not the one who is being represented in it, so
it's... I think it's a little bizarre. This is kind of just where I come from with it, to sort of frame the culture that is sort of steeped in Native American history and mythos and to have that center around America. Like I think that's inherently just a weird concept, because it's like you're already there and you're sort of adding a little more like substantial insight into like America, which took away from the Native Americans. And it's like, you know, like why is the colonizer becoming the creator? You know, like that's just a weird thing that I've always thought about that.
Yeah. And I mean, in this standpoint, we are the dinosaurs. We are the robot dinosaurs taking the land. But like, and I didn't see, I was trying to look into like the production side of things and the development, and like I didn't see them talking with native groups at all, or talking with it. Just it, there are ways in which it kind of feels at times like it's, you know, primitive tribal society as dictated by a bunch of white video game guys.
Right.
I mean, part of the problem,
It lacks a little bit of nuance, and it feels like a video game society, which is, I don't know.
I mean, part of the problem is probably that this was developed by a studio in Amsterdam, and we're probably not super aware of the problems that they were stumbling into, and probably didn't...
The historical context of what they were referencing, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say this about Ubisoft. They certainly do their diligence when they are referencing a time and place. I think those Assassin's Creed games are quite boring, but when I think of Origins in particular, they did a lot of good work sort of referencing appropriately and giving more of an accurate landscape of, you know, that time period.
And they've kind of embraced that. We're talking about a different game now, but
but to the positives with this game, there are lots of people of color for sure, and also like they wanted to have a female protagonist, and at least like there is a fair amount of woman power in this game.
Oh yeah, totally.
Like at the beginning, like again, Aloy is outcasted because she doesn't have a mom.
Right.
It is a society run by matriarchs. It is. I mean, sorry, I got really hung up just like how crazy that sentence sound. Aloy was a clone of Elizabeth Sobeck, so she was just sort of like spat out from the machine. So like the culture just kind of found a baby on the ground one day.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that means.
Yeah.
She does sometimes feel a little Lara Crofty.
A little bit.
How so?
I'm just in contrast to like... I guess honestly it's
climbing, cave diving.
It's not necessarily fair because it's sort of like contrasting it to like the newer Lara Croft games more so than anything else. Just the nature of her chosen oneness. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, Lara Croft is the one who arrives on the scene and like, oh boy, is she gonna whoop some butt?
And like, but then she's gonna have a moment and cry over a deer she killed.
Oh, Aloy
at times has a little bit of that going on. Not a bad thing. It definitely, like, as a character archetype, it's still kind of underutilized. Which says something about how stupid this fucking industry is sometimes. Sorry. Just makes me real mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, look, we are locked down. We are stir crazy. The gloves are coming off.
Well, and, you know, I will say that I appreciate that this game doesn't dwell on the fact that she is a female protagonist.
Yeah.
And that is inherently the problem with, you know, even the reboot of Lara Croft. It is, you know, their marketing for that was watch the badass mm-hmm. form. I mean, I think that is inherently like a fool's errand. You know, you shouldn't dwell on that because, you know, again, you're a development team primarily composed of dudes. So it's always going to ring hollow.
Male gaze, baby, male gaze.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's not a point of fixation for Aloy as a character.
Not at all.
Or just the narrative. And I appreciate that, of course.
No, it's really just like, that was sort of where like, it's something that just more hits you over time. We're like, oh, like. Like this was never pointed out, but like, oh yeah, this is run by women and mm-hmm. it's yeah, given a lot of importance right. and right. but it's never like called out. There's never a moment in the game where it's like press X to say how great we are for doing this.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I definitely think like, again, I don't think that she is on the Lara Croft scale, like completely equatable. I would say from a Lara Croft to Senua, from Senua's Hellblade scale.
We have a lot of weird sliding
scales. Yeah, a lot
scales
of scales.
A lot of scales in this one. It's totally where we're at. It's today's bit. But did you guys ever play Senua?
No, but I want to. I really want to play that game.
Hellblade Senua Sacrifice is real fucking neat. And I would definitely say that Aloy feels kind of in between.
Okay.
Little bit of Lara Croft, but like right. she's got some depth. She's not got depth so much that we're thinking about the narrative and the structure of her mental health. We're not there, but we're good. We're good. We're in a good. I think she's in a good healthy place as a dynamic character.
Right,
guys. On a scale of Rayman to Marcus Fenix from Gears of War, how beefy are her arms?
Rayman is just mittens, my friend.
I know. That's
yeah, it's
point.
No
that's
arms.
Goddamn okay. joke.
Caleb.
Piece of shit.
I was like, wait a tick.
I want you to know that I did not hear a word Max just said for the last 30 seconds. I've been frantically trying to think of the other end from Rayman.
It's so obviously Marcus Fenix. He's
no,
just
you're super
a
right.
hulking doll. Like he is a yes. hulking meat doll.
Yeah, he is. He's all arms and no brain.
I mean, it's either that or the dog boss from Sly Cooper, but that is a reference that no one will get but my brother, maybe.
I've played Sly Cooper.
You remember the dog too. One? Little gangster?
Yeah.
He's all arms.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Right?
It's a fun game. I don't Cooper. Know why you're thinking no one knows about Sly Cooper.
I'm really glad that we have the recorded moment that David realized other people have played Sly Cooper.
Yeah.
I just figured it would be a shot. I mean, yeah, like people have played it, but do you remember All Arms Dog Boss?
It's not like we're like, hey, remember Beginner's Guide? To like a group of Call of Duty players?
Yeah. Okay, we've started vamping a little bit.
Guys, on the scale of Call of Duty to the Beginner's Guide, where do you think where do you think Horizon Zero Dawn falls?
Right. The last note I have in my document, and this is not going to help us, it just says pretty, because this game is
it's
very gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
It's really, no, I mean, we talked about it again, like earlier, like the game oozes with original design.
It's got
like,
some good volumetric lighting.
Good light, good color, the like environmental areas feel really nice, and there's a really nice parallel between, what's it called, mechanical and natural, which I really appreciate.
They really found a good way to just kind of make Magic Hour last for an entire day. That's kind of like the lighting of this.
You're totally right. Yeah, they kind of... Do you wonder if somebody was like... They were like at one point like, hey, I think I found the perfect lighting for like the perfect time of day. And someone was like, why don't we just apply it to the whole game?
Perfect.
Nailed it. But it is true. Like there are... This is another game where like there are some stills of like natural vistas with robotic machine dinosaurs poking up. Yep. That like, yeah, baby, that's a good still right there. Right
oh,
there
like,
on
I,
its
I
own.
Probably,
awesome.
Using photo mode, I probably took like at least a dozen pictures.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my bigger issues are, you know, when it comes down to enemy encampments and some of the town areas you get to, there's, I don't know, it feels very like slapdash. And I know that's the point. That's what they're going for, but it doesn't quite spark that like intrigue that the rest of the world does.
That's maybe why I thought of the contemporary Lara Croft games, because yeah, that has the same shit going on there where it's fun to be in the environment, but the cities sometimes feel a little boggled down and like,
yeah,
all right.
It's just like, where are the people with the quests that I can get, move out of the way.
Get me quests so I can get out of this town as fast as possible and go find some more dinosaurs.
Right.
You know, it's super true. And I think that for a game that has, you know, really good visuals like this, I don't remember the HUD being something that I'd complain about. And sometimes you run into that problem where a game looks really good and just like the HUD is just always...
It's a little goofy.
I've seen much worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen... So on a scale... No, I'm kidding.
Oh my god.
yeah.
I didn't have anything else necessarily. Was there anything that you guys wanted to address before we signed off?
I think I've kind of broached my main criticisms just from like I think that what you kind of picked as your topics were good because they managed to kind of encompass things that you could criticize, but also give a lot of room for talking about the things that work really well.
Right.
I mean, here's the reality, and I'll just go ahead and move this into coffee table talk. And how I think of this game, it is partly like this is very much a game where I love it unabashedly, but I'm aware that it's not like perfect. Like it's not necessarily like the sort of game we would normally go for here. It's almost like the parts are greater than the whole in a way, where like it suffers from a lot of problems that typical open world games do. I love the story, but it is told through exposition dumps. Some of the towns feel very empty, but there's really good representation. The side quests are really interesting. The combat's good. Like there, it does move the needle in a couple different ways that I really appreciate.
It's kind of, I think that it's interesting that the side quest stuff, and I have not, you know, played the 15 plus hours that you guys have.
Way over 15, but I platinum.
I know. But even from what I've seen from the side quests, even as side quests, it's weird to me that the main narrative has so much exposition that bored me, whereas the side quests like have no exposition, and you could almost like pull all the exposition out and let the side quests speak in place of the exposition. You know, do the side quests to get more context. The main story narrative is not going to bombard you with this, but if you play the side quest and you played the main story, things that you're seeing get answered in little ways. You can make inferences off it. Yeah. It's so close to being really, really strong narratively, and then they were just like, I almost feel like there was someone that like wrote a big chunk of a whole big chunk of lore, and they like had a idea for the script was going to go, and then he was just like, but who's going to talk about how this got made? And it was Max, like, hey dude, that guy should maybe shut up in the future.
Hey Max, that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, no,
that is kind of what happened though.
But like I guess that the reality is moving forward, open world games, people working on open world games, get your fucking ego out of it. Who cares what you wrote? Look at the game.
The crit crew, we're coming for you, writers.
Like, well, I get it, but like there are some things that like you just as the player you don't have to know. Like there are things that like we bring up Dark Souls a lot.
No, motherfucker.
But, like, it was inevitable, David.
Get it out of your system.
Just let people figure things out. That's all I want to say. Like,
this is sort of my... And I hate to beat a dead dinosaur right now.
Technically, they're machines, so they were never really living, if you want to be... no, I'm kidding. All right.
I wanted to see David do a spit take.
you were close.
What, you know, I don't mean to belabor this point every single episode where we are talking about an open world game, but to go to Max's point, it's those vignettes that really hold my attention. It's the thing that really rewards the player for poking around your environment and sort of through osmosis gradually coming to terms with little facets of the world. I'm getting so fatigued of being funneled into, you know, from this giant landscape into a combat arena or a stealth mission or what have you, and getting my exposition through that mission. I think it is, it just, it does such a disservice to the world building.
You can just say that Outer Wilds has broken you, that you can't enjoy other games.
No, and this is something that, you know, I felt when I played Horizon Zero Dawn, you know, years and years ago. So it's not a new thought that I've had, but I would much rather the developers have more faith in the player appreciating what they're doing as they're doing it, rather than force feeding you sort of that narrative mm-hmm. at a dead crawl when you have reached a mission, quote unquote.
Open world has always been a very like literally used term.
Mm-hmm.
And like, let's use it a little more metaphorically. Like open world like has just come to mean large open space. Maybe we can apply open world a little further and go, maybe make it a little open to the player's interpretation.
Think
maybe
about
make
it,
it a little open to the narrative.
Are you
approach.
Hitting this blunt right now? Jesus.
sober shit. But like it, so, it's true though. The idea of the open world I think should be challenged. Right. And I think that it is being challenged, and I would say Red Dead Redemption in its tiny way challenges it. Its tiny way. And I think that Horizon Zero Dawn also, in its way, challenges this open world a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it sounds like, I think that's where ultimately I see this as landing in the book. Like, a very good game, not necessarily groundbreaking, but mm-hmm. does show some promise in some other aspects that I think people could learn from.
I think what, I totally agree with you. I think what kind of like hurts me in my heart is like, it's so close. It was really, really, really close to challenging things in a much larger way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was so close. So very close. So much so that it feels like part of the team was ready to take that challenge and the other part of the team was completely unwilling to.
Sure, it's just interesting that, you know, while Shadowfall was being developed, they went through their ideation process for Horizon and they were mostly trying to figure out the gameplay loops, figure out how the world was going to exist, the rules that were within, and they had just like a very nice prototype for it. And they had all sorts of beautiful concept art, just in a way that gave you a much bigger idea of what you're going to get into. And then, you know, they hired a writer, and the writer sort of scrapped quite a bit, including some of their gameplay mechanics, and provided them a fully realized 5-course meal of what Horizon Zero Dawn would become. And I think that's where, you know, it starts to get bogged down, because you have this very, like, lovely, organic process of concept to ideation, but then it's just sort of, it's spoon-fed.
It might be a 5-course meal, but boy, oh boy, is it the 5 courses you expect it to be.
Wow.
The reality, I think, is you just need to view the game with a certain amount of rose tint.
Yeah,
like there are just some things you have to kind of avoid thinking about too hard a little bit. There are some things where they go like, yeah, that's not great, but like,
right.
it's fine.
It was one of the few games that when I did get that 100% completion, I was sad that I finished it. Like, I wanted more. So we all agree it's the greatest game that was ever made. It's a beautiful work of art.
Spec Ops move over.
Yeah, right.
Spec Ops,
yeah.
Spec Ops move over, and we got a contender. Yeah, thanks guys for listening to the Crit Crew. I feel sorry. This happens every time, but when I'm doing an outro and it's going well, I just freeze up because I'm just waiting for you guys to interrupt.
I start panicking. Hold on. Are you freezing up because you feel the prey-like chill that's gone down your spine as a robotic velociraptor sneaks in the door after you let your dog out? Because that's definitely what's standing right behind you.
I haven't done the email yet. You can't kill me.
Damn it!
You do this all the time. Cuckoopodcast.gmail.com. We have a Twitter, Facebook, fuck it. Send us your feedback. Send us any games you want us to play for this brief return to form.
Oh, Max.
You can kill me now.
Max, I see the bottle of Jif behind David. It's moving.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Oh no. Visual humor. Oh no.
Oh no. Oh no.
For the record, I almost called it GIF peanut butter, so
so we're gonna cut it there.
but Caleb, David's allergic, he's dead.
No, I'm kidding.
He's gonna go into anaphylactic shock, y'all.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Did you record that? Please tell me you recorded saying anaphylactic shock.
I'm in physical pain. Oh my god. Oh, okay.
'Kay.
Hey, you guys vamp for a sec. I need to let Opal out. She's getting needy.
Let me see that dog.
We're that dog.
Let me see that dog.
Yeah, it's weird.